As I was reading this gospel passage from Luke 17 this past week, there were a couple of questions that initially occurred to me. Is wholeness the same as being cured? Is wholeness the same as being cured? And then the second question, is healing a removal of all the illness, or is healing something else entirely? I think these initial two questions are questions of tension and wonder for us as Christians, as medical science continues to push the boundaries of how we view healing and wholeness. Some of the most profound lessons in life often come from the most unexpected places. And I suppose the story that Sheila read with us from Luke 17 is one such example. It's a story, as we read, that takes place in the borderlands between Samaria and Galilee. And the first part of this story, verse 11 to 14 of chapter 17 of Luke's Gospel, the first part of the story is a healing story. Jesus responds to the cries of those 10 lepers, and all the sufferers were healed in an act of obedience on their part. And in the second part of the story, from verse 15 to verse 19, the story then takes a surprising turn. For only a rejoicing Samaritan returns to thank Jesus. Now we know from history that Samaritans were a people who, yes, they honoured the holy traditions in the Hebrew scriptures, which we have in our Bibles in the Old Testament. Soon after the death of King Solomon, David's son, the prophecy of Ahijah, which we read in 1 Kings 11, came true. It was fulfilled with the division of that ancient kingdom of Israel into two separate kingdoms. The new kingdom of Israel in the north and the new kingdom of Judah in the south. Now the Samaritans were descendants of those who had lived in the northern kingdom of Israel when the land was split. And as such, the Samaritans centered their faith, their worship on Mount Gerizim rather than on Jerusalem, Mount Zion. And there was, we know, a mutual and long-standing resentment between the Samaritans in the north and the Jews in the south, whose faith was centered on Jerusalem. So this Samaritan man, who was one of the 10 healed by Jesus, this Samaritan man would have been doubly unacceptable. He was a total outcast. He was a foreigner. And he suffered from what was then a very feared disease. Lepers were kept at the very edge of society. The disease was seen as a punishment for sin. And people were very, very frightened of catching it and becoming outcasts from society themselves. Leprosy was once the scourge of all illnesses. It was incurable. And those with it were shunned and shunted off to separate places. They were ostracized. They were a feared people. I suppose that today in our culture, perhaps the word cancer or admitting you have that disease instills an irrational fear among some people. And some people with AIDS feel the same way. Think, if you will, about the Tom Hanks film, Philadelphia, in which he plays a young man struck down in his prime, a man who is living and dying with AIDS. And remember the awful way that young man was treated as a consequence of his illness by his work colleagues and by those around him. Perhaps if you remember that, you will perhaps get some idea, some measure of the way that people with leprosy were and still are treated. Or if you've not seen the Tom Hanks film Philadelphia, then think of the film Ben-Hur. You must have seen that. I remember how Judah Ben-Hur's mother and sister lived on the edge of society, cast out from their home and their community, shunned by everyone because they suffered with leprosy. Now, leprosy, or Hansen's disease as it's sometimes called today, is one of the oldest recorded diseases in history. And today, although it's the least of the contagious communicable diseases, and although most people are naturally immune, it's still a very, very prevalent disease in many parts of Central and South America, in Africa, and throughout Asia. And millions of people are susceptible to the disease. There are, we are told by agencies like the Leprosy Mission, around 300,000 new cases of leprosy reported each year. And although the infectious nature of leprosy can be stopped very quickly within a few days with proper treatment, and although leprosy can now be cured by a 6-month multi-drug course of treatment, because of the poverty of its victims, thousands and thousands of people each year and their families are left permanently scarred by this disease. A disease which simply begins with loss of feeling in a patch of skin, and which is capable of going on to cause disability and even blindness if it's left untreated. It attacks the nerves under the skin, and that leads to a loss of feeling, to a very disfiguring paralysis, to skin being damaged, to unfelt injury of the hands and the feet and the face. And today, even today, leprosy is still surrounded by myths and stigma and by fear, which means that it is, for those who live with it, much more than simply a medical condition. So the condition then may well be translated into our feelings of feeling alone, of feeling misunderstood, of feeling helpless, perhaps actively shunned. And we don't have to have leprosy to feel these things. Feelings of being alone and helpless surely attack most of us at one time or another. Feeling misunderstood often happens in the classroom or the workplace, even in the church. And while the scene that's recounted in our gospel reading may be unfamiliar, there are, in our experiences, plenty of modern equivalents. Well, as this story in Luke's gospel opens, Jesus encounters 10 individuals who are living with leprosy. And despite the fact that they were 9 Jewish people and 1 Samaritan, they have banded together. They've banded together in their illness. And it's a mark, surely, of the horror of this disease that they had chosen to live together, ignoring their ethnicity, ignoring the other distinctions which would otherwise have kept them very, very far apart. And as they approach Jesus in this story, they keep a formal distance. That was required by law. Lepers had to stay away from people who were perceived of as being healthy. But still, they came near enough to cry out their appeal. And they must have cried out again and again and again to make sure that they were being heard by Jesus. And their cry was, surprisingly, not for healing, but simply for mercy. Jesus, Master, have pity on us. But I think it's clear that given their circumstances, the pity, the mercy they hoped for would be a mercy that brought about a healing from this awful disease of leprosy with which they lived. Now, as I read, it seems to me that apparently Jesus didn't see them at first. Luke says, when Jesus saw them, they must have been crying out for some time to get Jesus' attention. Jesus didn't see them at first, but when he did see them, he responded to their cries. He didn't go near them. He didn't go over to them or touch them. He didn't even say to them, "You are cured." And we might have expected that, given the awful disease that they lived with. Instead, Luke tells us that Jesus told them, leprous as they were, to go and show themselves to the priests in the temple at Jerusalem. That was the normal procedure, to go to the priest when an ill person was cured from their disease. You see, the priests in the temple acted as kind of health inspectors to certify that a cure had indeed taken place. And they were the ones, and they alone were the ones who could declare the person clean and whole, an action that was necessary for the person who'd been cured to be accepted again into their families and into the life of the community. That's commanded in Leviticus 14, commanded by God. And so Jesus says to the lepers, go and show yourself to the priests in the temple. Now, in nearly every miracle performed by Jesus for someone else, there was an element of faith on the part of the person, the other person. And here, Jesus was putting the faith of these 10 men who had leprosy, he was putting their faith to the test. He was doing so by asking them to act as though they had already been cured, to go to the priests. And it was as they were on their way to the temple to see the priests that the cure happened. On their way to the priest in the temple, they realized that their clawed hands were beginning to relax, and they could open up their hands, and the sensation of touch began to return to their fingers. It was long lost, but it began to come back. And perhaps as they reached up and felt the skin on their face, it was no longer diseased skin, but smooth, whole skin once again. And perhaps for the first time in many years, they discovered the sensation of sensitivity as they touched their face. It must have been amazing for them, on their way to the priest, simply making that journey in faith, to be cured of this disease that had robbed them of their lives and their families, their loved ones, their community. And then we read that one of the 10 men, a Samaritan, turns back. And as he does so, he praises God. And he returns to Jesus to give thanks for his healing. And we might ask, why is it the Samaritan who returns? Why did he not go with the other 9 lepers, or former lepers? Why did he not go with them to the temple in order to be pronounced clean and whole and acceptable once again? Well, perhaps his decision has something to do with the fact that he was a Samaritan. History tells us that in 129 BC, the Samaritan temple had been destroyed by the Jews. So there was really nowhere for the Samaritan to go to see a priest and to offer sacrifice in thanksgiving for his healing. And so instead, the Samaritan returns to Jesus, recognizing Jesus as the new temple. It's really a foreshadow of what Jesus says of himself, that he would tear down that temple and in 3 days rebuild it. The Samaritan's praising of God shows that he saw the hand of God in his cure. And he was ready to let everyone know about it. As he was returning to Jesus, he was praising, praising God at the top of his voice. Perhaps dancing and showing himself to be cured to all those who were around him. So thrilled was he, so grateful to God in his praise. And when he found Jesus, well, he acted with humility and he prostrated himself on the ground at Jesus' feet and he thanked the Master for his healing. And it's really only at this point in the story that Luke tells us that this man is a Samaritan. It might have been expected that the Samaritan would have been the last person to return to this Jewish healer to give him thanks. But he was the first, and evidently the only one. Sadly, it's a fact that if people don't give thanks quickly, they very rarely do give thanks at all. And in a series of questions, Jesus expresses disappointment in the other nine. I think he expresses this sense of disappointment in his fellow Jews for the benefit of the Pharisees, who were continually with him, challenging him, questioning him, trying to trip him up. The other nine were cleansed. They had an equal motive for rejoicing and giving thanks and coming back to Jesus and saying thank you. And it might have been expected that all 10 of the former lepers would have had a motive for praising God. But apparently the other nine were so absorbed in their newfound happiness that they couldn't spare a thought for its source. And I think we need to note from this story that Jesus encouraged the man who came back. He told him to get up and go on his way. And he was assured that his faith had made him well. I think we can presume that the other nine lepers had faith as well. That was certainly the common prerequisite for Jesus' miracles. But certainly this Samaritan had faith and he had gratitude. He wanted to give thanks. Now, when Jesus cures this man, this verb that we take to mean cure or be made well could be translated has saved you. Jesus recognized that in this Samaritan man, this outcast from Jewish society, faith had resulted in salvation. And so he sent the Samaritan off with the assurance that it was well with his soul as it was with his body. And from this story, we perhaps see that full restoration means a saved soul as well as a sound body. Today in church, we are not curing leprosy, but we are recognizing that faith that results in a saved soul, as well as the thanksgiving that is always due to God in Jesus. And having received this teaching from Luke's gospel, this message of salvation for all people, we also face the challenge which is spelled out in the words of Jesus and illustrated in the story of his great healing. And that challenge is a challenge to be like the one and not the nine. To be like the Samaritan who returned to Jesus to say thank you. It's the challenge to actually turn back, to praise God with a loud voice, to fall on our faces at Jesus' feet, to give Jesus our thanks. The theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote, "Only they who give thanks for little things receive big things." Well, we prevent God from giving us the great spiritual gifts he has in store for us because we do not give thanks for daily gifts. That giving thanks to God for daily gifts is so important. And perhaps we could put it into practice. Each night as you lie in bed, imagine that you, like the Samaritan, have fallen in thanksgiving at the feet of Jesus. And you might simply, before you go to sleep, simply thank Jesus for some of the things for which you are grateful. And then in the morning, before you get up, before you get out of bed, in the same spirit, and by the same spirit, list some more things that you're thankful for. Perhaps things you're thankful and looking forward to that day. You see, cultivating a life of gratitude, following the example of the Samaritan, can be that simple as regularly saying, "Thank you, Jesus." and in all circumstances. Thanks be to God.